Warning, the following audio transmission is based on theory and is intended for entertainment purposes only. It's Doomsday and its affiliates will not be held liable for anything your dumbass does. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everybody to It's Doomsday Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2024. Time is 3:14 p.m. And joining me at Hive Life 2024 is the B-Man Jay.
Yeah, so.
Which I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for you. I wouldn't know this event
existed
if it wasn't for you. And I probably would have murdered a shit ton of bees if it wasn't for you. Not that I'm a beekeeper, because I'm not a beekeeper. But I had a lot of questions, and I had a lot of interest in doing this, and I was going to be that guy that went to Rural King and bought the shit and ordered some bees on eBay. That's where I was going to go with this.
Oh, boy.
And then I talked to you, and it was like, no, dude, it's way more involved. And you start talking about, like, picking these mites and doing this and different equipment, and I'm like,
it's not that bad.
I don't got time for this. This is way too much work.
It is not that bad. It is actually a lot of fun. It's therapeutic. I love going into the bees. As you know, with PTSD, it just melts away, and it's my therapeutic. I can go in the bees, and it lasts for a couple of weeks before it starts kind of getting my PTSD, starts screwing with me, and I'm like, I go back in the bees, and it's about time. So, I mean, you only have to go in the bees every couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks in the spring and summer, and then you're not really doing anything until you pull your honey, then you're done. You know, then you're about every month away. So it's not a whole lot of work. It's more knowledge-based. You need to know more about your bees. It's not just put bees out there and they're going to do great. Back in 82 and 84, we started having hive beetles coming in and varroa mites, and it's still creating a problem. Not as bad when they first came in because they had no idea what this was. But, you know, as long as you have a lot of knowledge so that you can find out why your bees are declining or having a problem so that you can fix it and not redo that. You know, you don't want to be a Freudian thing and, you know, repeating over and over and not learning and becoming insane just because your bees are dying.
Right. Makes sense. So I picked up on a lot of different, I've learned so much over this weekend.
I was wondering.
God, the information overload, like I'll be dreaming about bees in my sleep now is what's going
to
happen.
Welcome to the beekeeping world. So we talk in our sleep about bees. Ask any beekeeper's wife. Or
listen,
her husband.
You know, here's the thing. I came into this really not knowing what I was going to expect. You know, not had no idea what I was coming to or what I was in for. And what's interesting is I went from somebody who, like, knows very, very little, like, knows nothing, don't know what the proper names are for bees, don't know what the names are for the breeds, anything, to sitting down and interviewing all these experts and getting this overload of information.
Oh, yeah, it can be.
So now I'm like, man, I feel like now I could sit down and have an intelligent conversation about the bees.
Good.
Halfway.
Well, that's the thing about this conventions is, you know, we started last night with kind of a short little talk and more of kind of meet and greet. Today, there's just class after class, multiple classes going on at the same time. And then tomorrow, there's more classes. And you can tell by time tomorrow afternoon, there is a mental point where you're just tired mentally. I mean, it's a lot of walking around to do, but it's you get so much information over these 2 days, your mind just melts. And if you're not taking notes, you won't remember what was going on.
Right. And you know what? The other thing is and it's not, and it might be the people. Maybe it's the people. But this has been the best event I've done in person. And, I mean, you helping track down people to be on the show and just the setup that we have here and the least amount of work I got to do. Because at every other event, I'm doing a ton of work along with trying to do the show and trying to get a guest. And it's just, it's craziness all the time. And this has been the only event where I'm like, man, I've got downtime. I can so I can make a phone call. I can stare. I can just, you know, I can do things, you know. Every other time, like you were with me at prepper camp, and it's just like I'm just stressed to the max.
Yeah.
Trying to find that time to sit down and put my game face on and do the show, you know. Here it's been just relaxed.
But you're finding the zen of beekeeping.
Is that what it is?
It is. I mean, one, beekeepers are very good people. Beekeepers love to help other beekeepers. You know, that's why we're here. We're sharing knowledge. We're talking about, I've learned things in the hallway. I've learned things in the classroom. I'm sharing ideas. It's just everybody's a much more low-keyed person. They're happy, you know, and we're here to learn and we're here to share knowledge. And you're liking it so far, right? So, and you've learned quite a bit.
Right.
And there's been some great people I've been trying to push down here to get interviewed. That was a nice rolling cart. Cut that part out of the fight.
Yeah, Producer Scooter, cut that out.
There we go again. Us here are good now. But, man, that's got some good coverage. So, with beekeeping, you know, I've been doing it 25 years, and when I was working with the state doing bee inspections, part of my bee inspections, the other part of the job was education. And I love sharing knowledge about bees, and you know that. I'm the bee man, Jay. So I would go to these clubs, I talk about bees, I come to these conventions, talk about bees. And one of the phenomenal things about beekeeping is everybody does it slightly different. It's your personal endeavor. Do you want to treat with chemicals? Do you not want to? Do you want to do this with your bees? Do you want to move your bees for pollination? Do you want to move them to get more nectar? Do you want to move them up to the higher elevation so you get the sourwood honey? Do you want to move them here to get clover honey? Or do you not want to move them? There's so many things that you can do with bees, and then there's so many different products of bees. Honey is a superfood. Then you got the pollen in there, and then you got the propolis, and you've been having people taste your...
The bee bread.
The bee bread.
Yeah.
And everybody's liking it. And I was a little skeptical at first. I'm like, man-made bee bread? I'm like, no, that's actually pretty damn good. So, you know, and you can use, as far as prepping, you know, it's liquid gold. You know, it never goes old. Honey, true honey never goes old. You know, the pollen, superfood. Propolis, it's great for your teeth, your gums, your insides, everything inside. Did anybody tell you that everything inside the hive is edible?
No, I did not get that piece of information.
Everything inside the hive is edible. The wax, the pollen, the propolis, which is the sticky
stuff. What about the larva?
The larva, too. I had to try it.
Okay, let's hear this story.
Well, my friend up north, he was always trying to buy some brood. I'm like, and the brood is the baby bees. And I'm like, why do I know? I'm like, why? He goes, oh, it's delicacy. I'm like, no.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had to try it at some point. And when you pop the exoskeleton on the larva, it has a snap to it. And then you get this taste of honey, because that's basically what they're eating is honey and pollen. And it's basically your bee bread is what they're being fed, along with honey and royal jelly at some point, but then honey. And it has a neat taste, but it's still, being an American, I'm like, it's larva.
Now I got to try that. So, I want to try one. Yeah. It's like this little bug that pops and it tastes like honey?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. But everything in the hive is edible. Whatever's not supposed to be in the hive, the bees will take at least 100 yards away and drop off. So any bees that might die, usually bees that die, they work themselves to death, and they die out in the field. The ones that do die, then there's bees that will drag them out and take them at least 100 yards away from the hive. They don't want any death near the hive. They could bring in skunks or raccoons or whatever. So they're always trying to take all that stuff out.
So can you eat the bees?
Yeah.
So have you eaten the bees?
I've ate the larva. The bees themselves, I haven't ate. I just haven't got to that, so I can't.
Well, because I know other living things eat bees, so they got to be edible to some extent.
Yeah.
Right? Question I didn't get, because there's questions I wanted to ask that I didn't get to ask because I've gotten so much good conversation with people. And we talked about like threats to the bees, but one thing I was concerned with, what is the biggest predator to bees? Like, what is the biggest natural predator to the bee?
The biggest pest to bees is humans.
Okay.
We do so much harm to the bees. I'm not just talking about the guys that come through and spray pesticides to kill off all the forage underneath the tree or the power lines or anything like that. I'm talking about we sometimes, as a new beekeeper, you really want to be in those bees. So you're in them so much that now they're starting to get ornery. Or we're putting the bees in a stressful situation, or we're not doing something. So we are a big pest. The bears are a big pest.
I didn't hear one person bring up anything bear-related except for the woman who works with the kids. She's like, you don't be a bear when you go in there. Don't be a bear. Bees don't like bears.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you don't want to get in there and start jostling stuff around, because inside the hive, it's completely dark. So they go by vibration and sense of smell. So if you get in there and you start bouncing stuff around, it really irritates them. So be calm, be relaxed, zen of bees, relax. But bears can be a problem. And here in East Tennessee and even over in North Carolina, we have a lot of bears. And if your bears know where the bees are, they'll keep coming back. And they're not like Winnie the Pooh. They're not after the honey. They're not there with a big jar. They're going after the brood. So they're going to take off all the honey supers, and they're going to get down to the bottom of the hive, and then they're just going to blow everything apart because they're going in there, and the bees are pissed. The bees are stinging them, and now they're trying to eat the brood. They're trying to eat the bees, and so it's just that's what they're going after. The real problem that a lot of people have nationwide is the varroa mite, and that's the pest that. It basically feeds on the fat of the honeybee. And when it does that, it releases an enzyme to break down that fat so that it can recycle or it can suck it in. And the problem is when they're letting their enzyme into the bee, that the viruses are getting into the bee. And then we're having to deal with sick bees. So if we didn't have the varroa mite years ago before 82 and 84 when everything started happening, beekeeping was easy. You know, you could put your bees out there. You didn't have to do anything. Didn't have to treat them. Didn't have to do anything. You know, grandpa would tell you, go get a frame of honey. You go out there, you lift it up, you pull out a frame of honey, shut the hive, come back in the house. Now you're eating fresh honey. So it was much easier. Now it's changed over the years, but it's still pretty good.
So, okay. What are some of the treatments for these varroa mite?
What's that?
The treatments for the varroa mite.
Well, I wouldn't say treatment free, I'm chemical free. So I don't treat my varroa mite with chemicals. I do a brood break, which basically I'm taking the queen out, putting her in a new area, and then I'm letting them raise a new queen in the original hive. I put the old queen in a new hive, and I'm trying to extend the brood cycle so that nothing's being laid, because the mites will be... They drop in at about 9.5-day-old cells. And then, so if I can make a longer time that the queen is not laying, then mites are dying off naturally. So that's how I do it. Other people, they're using Apigar, Apibar, Amitrak. There's all kinds of different ones. And each oxalic acid, there's all just different kind of chemicals. It's all what you prefer.
Right.
Or what your mentor told you to use.
So some of these guys, you know, they've been saying, don't start with just one hive. Start with about, maybe like 2 to 5.
No.
And don't be in it every day. Maybe once a week at the most.
Yeah.
That's it. Like once a week at the most, they said. But on average, I think someone said like every 2 weeks.
Yep.
Go check it.
Yep.
And then, there's a question of as you're learning, when do you pull your honey? What are the time frames for things? Like, at what time of the year is the honey ready?
Well, I like to pull my honey after the dearth. And the dearth is a dry period where there is nothing really blooming. Here in Tennessee, it's usually beginning of June through and middle to end of July. And here comes our buddy again.
So, he looks like he loves his job.
Yeah. I personally like to take my honey off after... Waiting for that roll.
Yep.
I personally like to take my honey off after the dearth. and it's basically just a dry period where there's nothing really blooming. Bees make that excess honey to get them through the winter. They're also making it for the dearth to get them through the dearth. A lot of people, they'll take off their honey before the dearth so that the bees don't eat the honey, then they feed them back sugar water. I don't think that's, you know, more information is coming out about nutrition for the honeybees. Well, if we're just giving them sugar water or even something with an additive, it's still not pure honey.
I feel like you'd want to give them honey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for thousands of years. We started feeding bees back in the 50s. That's as far back as I could find. I think it was 48, one reference. But in 52 and on, everybody started talking about feeding bees. Like, why'd you start feeding bees?
Well, because in the 50s, you didn't have these little mom and pop shops that were, you know, you got to think at that point, we were getting into this nuclear society.
Yep. Everything came after World War II.
Right. Everything was becoming electric. Everybody was starting to get refrigerators and getting indoor plumbing. And
yep.
We got dependent on this electrical grid, which makes us buy these appliances and pay these bills, which we got to go to work for. Anyway, I'm not going to get into all that. But back then, before this happened, a lot of these beekeepers were probably selling to the local mom and pop shops. There was no Walmart. There was no Kroger. There was no big stores. So it was basically you'd go down to your local shop at the side of the road and it'd say, hey, did the honey man come this week? Because I wanted some honey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's the beekeeper guy been? Now that it's commercialized and all this is going on, there's a need for overproduction.
Yeah.
So you got to feed for overproduction, right?
Well, in Tennessee, I'm not sure about every state, but at least in Tennessee, you cannot sell honey unless it's 100% honey. Which then you start looking at some of these people that are selling to these big commercial things, and you test the honey and you find out a lot of it's corn syrup. There's some honey in there, but it's corn syrup. And unless you... like you had a speaker earlier, she does a honey tasting thing. Once you develop your palate for honey, then you can know that every honey tastes different from different areas, and even from year to year, your own honey will taste slightly different because of the different things that bloom at different times, or some bloom, you know, so all of a sudden you'll have more apple trees or you'll have less apple trees, so that changes your context. So when you start tasting real honey, then you can tell that the other honey has corn syrup in it. And so it's one of those things that, and also back years ago, you know, you're talking about people became more reliant on that job because they had to pay for things. Plus, after World War II, women were in the workforce, men were in the workforce. Well, now the women know that they have independence. They don't want to give up those jobs, or they realize, hey, we can make money. And all of a sudden, you know, why should I bust my back bent over in a garden when I can just buy it?
Right,
and that's been
the common thing.
Yeah, you know, and right now, everybody used to have bees back in the day. Now, nobody has bees like they used to because we just run down to the store and buy food. You'll be amazed, like apple that has cloves on the bottom, if you put it on the table and it rolls, it hasn't been properly pollinated. If you put it on the table and it stands still, it's been properly pollinated. A cucumber, if it's straight, it's been properly pollinated. If it has a curve to it, didn't have enough bees. Watermelons, every seed in there has been pollinated. Every time it's been pollinated, it grows another seed. So if you get these seedless watermelons, you're actually eating a watermelon that's not been properly pollinated. So there's all these little things that you can look at nature and realize if you have enough bees or not. If you know what you're looking for, knowledge is power, right?
Yes. And there's a wealth of knowledge here at this convention.
There is. I've been doing this 25 years and I consider myself pretty good, but I've still talked with people. I'm still learning stuff today.
Kent blew my mind.
Kent is great.
Holy crap. He like knows everything.
And he'll tell you himself. He doesn't know everything. He still learns.
And that's something that was said to me today when I was doing an interview. It was, we know little about the bees. Okay, even with all this knowledge and everything else, there is so much more we still don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, that's like trying to wrap your mind around the idea that the universe goes on forever.
Yep.
Because I'm sitting here and taking all this information.
And getting overloaded.
And then it's like, wait, there's stuff you guys don't know? It's like, what is going on?
Well, there was a doctor, entomology, and he was talking about, oh, yeah, and somebody made a comment, are you like an expert on bees? He goes, yeah. Well, my friends at the table, no, you're not. What do you mean? He goes, the only expert on bees are bees themselves. And he's like, true. Because we don't know what they're doing 24/7. That's their job. That's all they do. They work themselves to death. They only last maybe 30 to 40 days in the summer. That's a short lifespan.
Yeah.
But in that time, they've tried to, all they're doing is getting food for the colony. They're trying to help the colony. That's it. They don't care about anything else. Bees are one of those, I think they are the only thing on earth that do no harm. And when they do, they die. Right? They go out, they pollinate. If you put bees at your place, your garden will do better. You'll have more produce. Even when they die, when they sting you, there's apitherapy. People will actually get stung because it helps you. But they die in the process. They are to the service of everything. And when they do a disservice, like they sting somebody, they die. I mean, that in Egypt, they think the bees were created from the tears of Ra when he cried. That's what created bees. So there's every religion has something to do with honeybees. I know I go off on these tangents when you... I don't do this on your regular podcast.
No, you don't.
When I do bees...
Because now we're doing bees.
I just roll.
Well, I'm going to take you back to reality for a second. Because a burning question in my mind after our hotel stay last night was, has anybody ever taken bees, put them in a controlled environment with only marijuana plants around, and had bees make marijuana honey?
A few years ago, there was a guy that...
It's happened.
Everybody was like, oh, he taught his bees how to work marijuana. Well, marijuana does not have nectar.
Okay.
It has pollen. The bees were working the pollen, but they weren't really doing anything. It wasn't like they were making, you know,
honey that would get you high.
Now, you can't.
High honey.
People do take THC and inject it into honey, and there's been more and more of those products coming out.
Yeah, medicinal THC honey, dude.
Yeah.
That's like the next big market. You should be getting into that.
Well, if Tennessee would legalize marijuana, maybe, but...
I just saw a dispensary right down the road.
For CBD.
Is that... Well, okay, so they're not there yet. No. They will be.
Well, they legalized... what's the other weed? Not marijuana. Without the THC.
The hemp?
Hemp. They legalized hemp like 5-6 years ago. And usually when a state does that... They're legalizing the hemp so that when hemp cross-pollinates with marijuana, it loses all the THC, which is the whole reason you're trying to grow it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody here in Tennessee thought that's what was going to happen. We would just grow inside buildings, throw the THC, and then grow hemp outside. Hemp is a great product. I mean, it would. If you look back at history, the only reason we went with cotton was because the cotton farmers had more political power than the hemp farmers. Hemp is a much better product. I'll digress. but yeah, there's so many products that can come out of a honey hive, out of a hive. It's getting late for me too. I know you're getting burned out with all this information.
Oh yeah, there's been a lot, but this is kind of refreshing from what I've been doing all day, so it's good.
I've done two talks today. I got two more tomorrow. I love talking about bees, as you can tell. I get amped. There's just so much knowledge about bees, and bees are the number one studied insect in the world.
Really?
Worldwide, by far, right? And we still, like they said, we still don't know
everything.
Crap about them.
Right.
There's so many still amazing things about them. But they are the canary in the coal mine, right? So we don't know how many other species have been here and gone, and now it never will come back again. But the bees, we're watching, and as they're slowly declining in population, in some years we have a better population of them. But we're watching them so closely that we'll know when they start disappearing. And people have said when the bees disappear, there will be no more food. Well, Ben Franklin didn't actually say that. But if we do lose bees, we're just not going to have any sweet foods. We're not going to have any good food. Are you going to want to eat yams and corn for the rest of your life?
Not really.
No.
Yeah, because corn is basically wind pollinated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we'll have kiwi, which is a little sweet, but, I mean, it's just, it's not, we're not going to have strawberries.
No, you want an apple. You want a strawberry. You want blueberries. You want these things.
Yeah, we want good stuff. And the production is going to be less. Plus, we're also going to lose meat because clover is pollinated by bees. Now, there are some better pollinators out there, but bees are the ones that we can help and we can work with a lot easier than these other pollinators. But if you look at it, you know, for meat production, if we have less clover, we have less grass fields, we have less to eat for the beef, which I'm sure PETA people out there will just, you know, love.
I don't think too many PETA people listen to this show.
But if we have less clover out there, less grass fields, that means we're going to have less meat, less cows on the fields. So now we've lost all the sweet stuff. Yeah, we got corn, we got kiwi, we got certain foods that will be staple foods, but I'm sorry, I get bored of the staple foods, and I like my meat. So therefore, I don't want to lose bees. So we all need to at least learn a little bit something about bees so that we can think about it a little bit closer and examine. Maybe I shouldn't be spraying that Roundup right on my plant until I'm trying to kill it as it's standing there. At least if you're going to spray Roundup on your yard, do it at night so that it dries on the plant overnight. So in the morning when that bee comes over there, because the bee doesn't see a weed, it sees a pollen source or a nectar source. And then by the time you've sprayed that overnight, it's dried on the plant and it's sucking up the nectar and not the poison, taking it back to the hive.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. So, well, and I'll tell you what, I've been looking into doing natural weed killers. Things that utilize vinegar and Dawn and some other things. Is that safe for the bees or bad for the bees?
The vinegar is fine, but when you put Dawn in there, then it's going to suffocate the bee because they breathe through their exoskeleton. So if they get in that, then it's going to coat them and they're going to suffocate to death. But if you spray at sunset, there's not a whole lot of bee action at sunset.
So they're all dry and be good by the day. And I'm thinking also, like, you know, the idea you have, like, morning dew. What happens when that Roundup and stuff, like, re-liquefies?
Usually the morning dew really doesn't do a whole lot because the plant's already sucked it in over the night. So by the time it gets in the morning, that dew's on there, the plant's sucking up the dew. The bees usually don't come right out in the morning. They usually wait till about 50 degrees on average before they come out. Now, if your season's, like, cold like right now, I've seen my bees fly at 30 degrees. And most of the time, they're just coming out, they're doing a defecation run and going back in. Now, when it gets about 40 degrees, if it's been cold for a long time, then yeah, I'll see them up to the house. My bees are way down the field. They're out looking for any kind of food source.
No, so it's not that necessarily that the bees hibernate, right? It's that there's no food source, so they basically kind of conserve energy for the spring.
Well,
is that kind of how that's working?
When it's getting cold out, they build up all that honey, and hopefully you left enough honey on there. I've seen so many hives that die by March because they're just starved to death. People took too much honey off. But basically, the queen stays in the center of the cluster, and then there's hopefully about a basketball-sized cluster in your hive. Inside where she's at, she's about 95, 96 degrees. On the outside of the cluster, it can be minus 10, 20 degrees outside. And the bees on the outside, they're cold. But as they get too cold, they get pushed towards the center to warm back up, and then those bees on the inside go to the outside. So it's always in flux throughout the cold season. Now, they're only shaking their wing muscles to keep them warm. But the queen is the most important part, so she's always about 95, 96 degrees in there. And then the best, as far as research can tell, the best temperature is about 32 to 34 degrees that are going to eat the least amount of honey. Once you get above 34 degrees, they're getting a little more out of that. It's not really a hibernation, it's a more of a temporal state, but they wake up more and they want to eat more. Now, if it drops below 32 degrees, then they have to eat more to keep warm. So that 32 to 34 degrees is like the best point where they're eating the least amount of food.
Okay, that makes sense to me, I guess. I was asking Kent about them. I didn't really ask him the question, like, if they're hibernating. You know, I was asking him, like, do they freeze? Like, what's going on there? And he explained to me the whole process of how you'll have these bees with their heads stuck in the cell with this little thin layer of wax, and they're just flapping their flight wings to vibrate and keep warm. And then he said, when they run out of energy, they just circulate out and send the insulator bees in. And he said, it's just this cycle.
Yeah, it's a constant flux.
And it's and that is wild to me to think that these little critters are just so smart to keep this method going for all these years, you know? Because it's not like they started this 100 years ago. This has been millions of years that this has been going on. And then you, if you subscribe to the idea of, you know, anything apocalyptic, whether it's the Great Freeze, like the Ice Age, or if you're talking about like meteors hitting the Earth, these critters survived all that.
Yeah.
If they're here, right? And it makes you wonder, kind of back in like, you know, what were Jurassic bees like? Did you have these big bees floating around with honey cells like this big? You know,
that'd be kind of cool,
right? I mean, I don't know if I'd mess with them.
And you know, basically what we have here in America is the European honeybee, and then they have the Asian honeybee, and then you know, and there's so many different types of bees. They even have stingless bees. So if you look on YouTube or TikTok, you'll see guys just grabbing bees and shoving them down their shirt. They're stingless bees. They don't make a lot of honey, but they'd be nice. But they do make what's called a bee beard. You take the queen and you put her in a cage and hang her around her neck, and then other beekeepers start dumping bees on you, and then you just have this big beard of bees. Yeah, I can see that look in your eyes.
Why?
If you guys didn't see that on video, he's like, what?
Why?
Because
Why would someone
can,
do that?
Right?
I guess, yeah, because you can.
It's something you can. But I don't even know how we got there now. I see I've run off a tangent.
We're talking about making stoner honey and all this other stuff. You know, we've reverted back to what its Doomsday Podcast is really about.
Yeah. So it's bees are just fascinating. And I've done this for like 25 years or so. And usually I master something enough that I feel I can talk comfortably about it, or I can do it at some point later in my life, and then I move on to the next topic. Bees, I'm always learning about. There's always something new to learn about. And then there's something that I can tell people about, and I can convey that information and keep, you know, helping people make better bees or making their bees survive. Because a lot of people will lose their bees in the first 3 to 5 years. There is a huge learning curve, as you can tell. When you've been talking to these people, how much information do you learn today? Are you going to remember everything?
And it's like you talk to the guy that's been doing this for 35 years, and then you talk to the person that's been doing this for 5 years. And for someone like me who hasn't done this at all, it's each side is an overwhelming amount of information.
Yep.
And it's when I first thought about the idea of doing bees as a prepper for the idea of honey and self-sustainability, it was the idea of, oh, this has to be something totally easy to manage. You put the bees in a box, you walk away, you go back later, you get the honey, it ain't no problem. That was my thought. Then I met you and I'm like, no, this is way more involved. And now that I'm here, I'm like, maybe this is something I could maybe start thinking about again. You know, but I think it's going to be one of those situations where I want way more knowledge before even thinking about where to start. And I think that I would want to start venturing out and visiting some people and seeing what they got going on before I would even attempt to plan out anything. Because it seems like the smarter you are with this and the more knowledge you possess, the less involvement you actually need to have.
And I'm sorry I scared you away from honeybees. It wasn't my intent.
I was like, no, we're not doing that.
But I'm trying to be realistic to people. I mean, you need to educate yourself. It's very important that you educate yourself about honeybees. It's like, there's a joke. How do you make $1 million in honeybees? You start with 2 million. You're going to have losses. You're going to lose bees. Don't freak out about it. Figure out why you lost your bees. Because I will ask everybody, how's your bees doing? Oh, they're doing great. That's in spring and summer. Come around wintertime, I'm like, how's your bees doing? Oh, I lost my bees. I'm like, well, how'd you lose your bees? I don't know. Why do you not know? You see a convention like this, there's all kinds of helpful beekeepers here. Have you met anybody that's mean today?
No.
No. They are here to help. Call me. It was my job at one point to come out and help you understand why your bees died. Mm-hmm. Why are you not asking a question? You know, knowledge is power. If you can learn why your bees died, then you can not do that next time, hopefully, or at least decrease the amount of problems there. So, you know, beekeeping is easy. But the hardest part is educating yourself. And I've seen that through my job, is a lot of people have a lack of education as why their bees die.
Right.
Because they just think it's the easiest, just putting bees out there. It used to be. Not anymore.
So what about things like, you know, raccoons, possums, squirrels, are any of these things messing with the bees?
If you have a skunk, she will come up at night and she will scratch, or he will scratch at the front of the hive. And when the bees come out to see what's going on to guard it, she'll start eating the bees off there. So you want your hives usually about 2 cinder blocks off the ground, 12 to 24 inches. And if that doesn't work, then you can take chicken wire and roll it up and stick it in front of your hive, because skunks want to be able to step on something solid. They don't like springiness, and they don't like things that they can look through to step on. And you want it up high so that when she or he gets up there, she's exposing the belly so that the bees can sting her and it'll chase her off. Raccoons, not as much of a problem. Frogs, they will actually sit next to the opening and they'll be picking off the bees as they're flying in and out.
Really?
And they can take off 100, 150 bees at a time.
No? Wow.
Yeah.
How many bees are going to hive? Like, what's the typical amount of bees living in a hive?
Well, when you buy a package of bees, you get 5,000 bees. Typical hive.
What does 5,000 bees cost?
A package, I don't know. I don't even know. I try to sustain my own apiary, so I haven't bought bees in years. I'd say probably around $150 for a package of bees. That's a queen and 3 pounds of bees. So you're looking at about 5,000 bees. A nuke will cost you anywhere from $150 to $350. Now, there are some queens out there, just the queen, that run you anywhere from $400 to sometimes
$10,000. $10,000 for a bug.
For a bug that can fly
That's
away.
Crazy.
Yeah, I wouldn't even pay $400 for a queen that can go wee. Now, some people will clip their wings, but I'm like, no. And one, I'd rather make my own queens. I know what my stock is.
What makes a queen valued at that high of a dollar amount?
That they're roll of sensitive, or it's just like media. You know, it's just how you spin things, you know.
Right. They hype up the queens.
Yeah. You want a good queen in there, because you want a queen that's going to lay 1,000 to 2,000 eggs a day. You know, that's her job all day long. She doesn't like, hey, I'm only going to lay eggs from 8 in the morning until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, then I'm taking off. No, she lays 24 hours around the clock. It's dark in there. She doesn't know time. So she's laying. That's all her job is. She doesn't go eat unless she really wants to. The bees will come up. They'll feed her. They'll groom her. Her job is just to make eggs. The workers, they do everything in the hive. They raise the brood. They bring in nectar. They bring in pollen. They make the nectar into honey. They secrete the wax on their abdomen to make the honeycomb. They clean the hive. They guard the hive. They do everything. The guys, I consider them, you know, like guys. We want to go out. We have fun. The drones, they go out. They hang out in a drone congregation area, which is like a bar. They're hanging out with all their buddies waiting for a virgin queen. They have extra big eyes so that they can see a little bit further. They're usually up in a higher spot, so they're overlooking an area. So when that virgin queen flies by, they fly down, slam into her, it snaps off, they fall to their death.
Right.
So after she's after she's become a slut for like 3 to 5 days, and she's mated with at least 8 to 20 drones a day, she goes back in shame and hides herself in the house for the rest of her life. After she gets done mating, basically, she goes back in and she just lays eggs. That's all her job is. Now, in the next spring, if the hive is doing very well, then she will actually take all the old bees, the foragers, with her and leave after they gorge on a bunch of your honey, so that when they get to their new spot, they can start excreting wax and make a new home, leaving the old home to the new queen that she's laid a bunch of queen eggs, queen cells.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Way more information than what I knew earlier. It just keeps coming in.
Too much information.
Anyway, so we're going to get out of here. Do you want to plug some stuff for Hive Life, the website, all that stuff? Because this is taking place again next year.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And hopefully I'll be back next year.
Yeah, hopefully. Everybody's liked you, so.
Well, that's good.
HiveLifeConference.com. I'm hoping we are about the same time of year next year. You can follow me, the B-Man J, on any social media platform. We have, I think, 24 or 27 speakers today.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize there was that many going on today. I haven't been back there once today.
Oh, well, hopefully you can get a chance after you pack up, come back and look around real quick. But I'm pointing at Steven. He better get over here. I need him to interview next. But, see, I'm still rambling. But, yeah, coming to Hive Life, if you're a beginner beekeeper or even a seasoned beekeeper, you are going to learn something here. And these conferences are great because you take that knowledge, you go back home, and then you run with it. Like anything, you read a little snippet online, you got to dig deeper, educate yourself.
Awesome. Thanks, B-Man. Thanks for coming back on the show. I think it's like the 10th show we've done.
Has it been that many?
I don't know, maybe.
Oh, boy.
This is an emergency action message. At approximately 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, NORA is tracking 15 ICBM nuclear missiles inbound to the following cities: Orlando, Miami, Pittsburgh, Dover, Newark, Richland, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Boston, Seattle, Detroit. This is an extremely deadly situation. Stay tuned, the next emergency message will be a presidential address.